Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
She was always the sweetest little sister. She was always making me snacks, and all of my cousins just love her because she's just really attentive and kind and just a really, like, giving person. And kind of always tried to be perfect.
She told me everything, and that's another reason I don't think she had been playing this for a long time. I think this was just spur of the moment. She just decided, I want to get out. I don't think she planned on staying away from this long. I don't think she could have consciously done this to her parents and friends and family. So yes, I do believe she planned on coming back.
My mind comes up with all kinds of stuff that I think probably happened to her, but like some of it I just try not to think about. I just try to stay positive because that's what gets me through the day, is having faith that I'm going to find her.
On March 31st, 2020, 25-year-old Kenna Harris carefully packed a backpack with her medications, a yoga mat, and some of her other favorite belongings, and headed out of the family home in Monroe, Washington. There was a local bus that was supposed to take her to her shift at work that day, but Kenna didn't go to work and told the bus driver to go on without her. Instead, Kenna walked to a nearby bank, withdrew some money, and then traveled via public transit to Snohomish, Washington, where she disappeared without a trace after being tracked via an intricate web of surveillance footage and phone pings. In the months since Kenna disappeared, she has not been seen or heard from again. This is a story about Kenna, her life, and the mystery of her disappearance. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 235 of The Vanished, part one of Kenna Harris's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Kenna Harris came from a large family in the state of Washington. She was raised with many siblings and parents who kept everyone busy. She excelled academically and was a talented athlete, participating in volleyball, track, and even pole vaulting in school. We spoke to her brother, Hunter, and asked him to tell us about Kenna's life and talents.
I'm the youngest in my family. I'm 19 years old, and I'm the youngest. I have four older siblings. And so the next oldest above me would be my brother, Mason, and he is, I believe, 24 years old. And then Kent is only a year older than him. And then I have another older brother. His name's Jimmy, and another older sister. Her name's Cammy. So kind of a larger family, you could say, growing up. So we used to live in an old house. We lived in Maltby, Washington, and we lived in a house there. And that's where I grew up while I went through elementary school and such. And Kenna had a lot of pets. Like, we had a big yard. Large yard. I remember Kenna having a bunny rabbit. I believe its name was Bun Bun. And she had that bunny rabbit for a while, but then it ended up passing away. But she always had pets, it seemed like. I think she had a couple ducks and this or that. But she liked being outside. And I guess we all did. We'd all go outside and play around. And then we probably lived in that house until I was in say, 6th or 7th grade. And then we moved to Monroe, where we lived in this house for the rest of the time, I guess, now, and just growing up here. And we have an even bigger piece of property and just more things to do. And then, let's see, Kenna was still in high school for quite a while we were living here, and then I was in middle school. Oh, she was always very involved with school. Like, she was a very social person. And so I remember at middle school, she did things like, if there was ever any a fundraiser or anything to do, I mean, Kenna would be doing it. And she would be not just doing it, but like doing it to the best of her ability. I think she would win most of them, or the majority of them. There was one time where she won it, she got to become the principal of the middle school for the day. Kenna was into sports. She was a huge volleyball player. She played, I believe she started in middle school. So she started just playing for the regular middle school team, and then got really involved and really into it, and had a good coach that was actually a member of our church. And so that coach pushed her a long ways, and she ended up playing club volleyball and making some very prestigious teams and practicing and training with these different teams and making club and select teams that it would be extremely difficult to get onto. And she just did a great job and really excelled at it. And then along with that, as I vividly remember this as well, because I got to just go along with them, and yet she was really involved with track. I believe she was still playing volleyball as well, but it might have died down. And she started to really put her focus into track. What she did was she pole vaulted, and she took that just a long ways. I mean, anything she got into, she really put her heart and soul in it and really tried her best. And I remember going to, I think it was like the UW training facility for track or something, and I got to watch my sister, Kenna, train with these college athletes, I think it was, and just get better. And she didn't go much further than that, but while she was in high school, I mean, she just did an amazing job.
Kenna's mom, Kelly, also spoke with us and shared what Kenna loved doing and what she was involved in during her school years.
She was a super independent, fun-loving, active, athletic, really smart. One of those kids that got all the awards when she got out of junior high. Teachers really liked her. But she had a lot of friends. She did volleyball, track and field. Her personality was pretty serious, fiercely independent, liked to tackle hard challenges. In high school, she learned how to pole vault. That's not an easy thing to learn how to do. She stuck with it, went to a lot of camps, and kept at it because she was determined to figure out how to do it. And she did good. She wasn't like a rock star pole vaulter or anything, but she figured out how to do it. Oh, unicycle. She did the unicycle club in middle school.
In March of 2020, Kenna was living at home with her family. On March 31st, Kenna was supposed to take a bus to her shift at a local Walmart, where she had been working for only a few weeks. We asked Kelly to walk us through the events of the day.
The morning that she vanished, I had a doctor appointment. And so when she was getting ready for work, I was not home. And she called me and she said, "I'm feeling anxious about getting on the bus." She had that DART bus that would come to the house and pick her up. She had qualified for that. We got that for her. And she did not like that. She didn't like riding that bus. That was pretty normal for her to feel anxiety trying to mobilize out the door to go somewhere. It was normal for her to feel anxious. So I was like the cheerleader and she was like the team. And I would just do, you know, whatever was called for that day, humor, pep talk or something to remind her that if once she just passed out the threshold of the door, she did amazing most of the time. Some days she went through the threshold of the door and went out and it wasn't amazing. And I would go and pick up the pieces and bring her back home. So she made that call to me and I said, "Oh man, I'm just getting to my doctor appointment, honey. And you can do this, you know, just get out the door and you'll be good." And then I put a call into my husband to let him know that she was having a bad time. And so I know that he said that he talked with her. And the last time he saw her, she had gotten dressed and said, no, she was good. And she was going to go, or they, at least they thought that she was mobilizing to go. And so they went out to the shop and back to whatever they were working on. It was him and my son. And apparently when the DART bus came to get her, she told them that she was not going to work. And so then the bus just left from the house. And then she walked away from the house. And she had a backpack and a yoga mat. She had a coat on. She had a knit stocking cap. She had her blue jeans and her black tennis shoes that have a black sole.
At the time that Kenna walked away from home, her family had no reason to think that anything was wrong and believed that Kenna had just gone to work. Kelly told us about when she started to become concerned about her daughter.
That day, I kind of got distracted. Somehow I got lost in the thing. The day after, because that night we called the cops at 7, we couldn't go look for her. The phone died in the middle of Monroe, and we know she's on a bus. So it's like, oh my gosh, what direction would we go, right? So we just go to bed hoping that she's going to come home. She's just on a little whatever. She's meeting a friend or something, and she's going to come home. So she doesn't come home.
Kelly told us some of the information they've been able to gather about Kenna's movements that day.
She walked down the driveway and walked past the neighbors, and the neighbor girl saw her. She said she put down her backpack and looked in it for a while, like she was looking for something, and then she kept on walking. So she walked to the Chase Bank that's out in the parking lot at Fred Meyer's, and she took out $230, which was pretty close to everything she had in there. I think she left like a dollar or some cents in there. She took out the $230 and then she walked across the street and got on the city bus. And I had just maybe 2 months ago showed her how that she could use Google if she was on her phone just to figure out where a bus stop was. And I was working with her, showing her how to work the bus. And friends had helped her ride home from Walmart one time on the city bus. And they rode with her. She got on that day by herself. And she didn't have to pay because the virus was going on. So you don't have to pay to get on the bus. And she got on and rode over to Snohomish. And we can see on the bus footage that the bus stops outside of Snohomish Station, which is the shopping center there. And a couple people got off. And she turns her head, like she looks up there. And then she doesn't get off and she just sits back on the bus. And then the bus goes down the road just a little ways more. And then she pulls the cord and stops the bus just down the road a bit. It's right in front of this place called Washington Tractor. And she gets off there and she walks back towards the shopping center. We have some footage from Bickford Ford across the street that shows her walking back towards the shopping center. That's the last footage because Subway up there in that shopping center, when the COVID-19 happened, I guess the man that owns that particular Subway owns like 20 plus other Subways. And for whatever reason, he left only one employee at that Subway. Because I noticed when I kept going back, it was always the same guy. And finally I talked to him. I said, what's the deal? And he's like, oh, I'm the only one that they kept. I'm working 7 days a week, 10 hours a day. I thought, that's weird. But he's like, we wanted the video footage from that Subway. So Snohomish County detective asked for the video footage. Nope, no video footage. The owner of Subway's out of town, or he's too busy. That's what the guy would always say. He's too busy. And so they never gave him the footage. The detective said, well, maybe their footage thing, their camera wasn't even working. But they didn't push very hard. They never got the footage from that Subway. He got the footage from Home Depot and from Kohl's in that parking lot, but there's nothing on it. There's like little foggy figures of people walking, but you could never tell who they were.
As police and Kenna's family tracked her movements via surveillance footage and information coming from her Google account, her parents rushed to follow her footsteps with the hope of finding her.
We know exactly what time she got on the bus, right? From the Google tracking of the phone. So we go, I drop my husband off, we wait for that exact bus. He gets on the bus, and thank heavens, it's the same bus driver. And he shows him a picture of my daughter, and he goes, oh, yeah, yeah, she was on my bus. And my husband says, can you show me where she got off the bus? And he's like, yeah. So I follow them, and he shows my husband where she got off the bus. So that's how we did that. And then we went up and just went to every single business in that entire shopping center. It was actually my husband was the one that went into the Subway and talked to that guy. He said, yeah, she came in and she asked if we had gluten-free bread and we didn't have any. And so she went back out. And then I went in later and talked to him and I said, so my daughter came in here. Did she have a backpack? And he said, no, she didn't have a backpack. So that's always freaked me out because she did have her backpack on. We can see it in the video when she's walking down there. She would never like take her backpack off and leave it outside the store. It wasn't even a big backpack. It's just a school size backpack. I guess it had a yoga mat attached to the outside of it. So maybe he just didn't notice it. So sometimes I can think, oh, she puts down stuff and forgets it. So then sometimes I worry. She went in there for whatever reason, put her backpack down on the floor to get her wallet out or something, and then forgot her backpack in there. And she doesn't have any of her medication with her. And we found that. And then we just like got right on the phone and we called 911. And they sent a search and rescue officer that very day. And we're right there. We're like, we found where my daughter was. She went to the Subway and that's it. We can't find where she went from there. Can you please call the dogs? And my son rode up there on his motorcycle and brought some of her clothes out of the dirty clothes. But it had rained really heavy the night before. And he said, it's been 12 hours and it rained heavy last night. So the dogs really cannot do anything in this asphalt parking lot.
The trail stopped after Kenna left the Subway restaurant, and soon after, her phone died or was powered off. Without any hint as to where she was going, Kenna vanished, with only her small backpack of belongings on her, never to be seen again. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. In order to tell the story of Kenna's disappearance, we have to go back about 6 years, to 2014, when Kenna's life changed forever. To fully understand what was possibly going through Kenna's mind on March 31st, 2020, when she packed her bag and left the family home, we had to go back to that year when so much changed in Kenna's life in just two events. When we talked to her brother, Hunter, he told us about the first one.
She ended up going to school at BYU, Idaho, and that's a university in Idaho. And I guess you could call that a private college, but it's a college, Brigham Young University. It's a Mormon school. And Kenna was a really smart girl, and she just wanted to go expand her education or further her education. Now, while she was at school, she was with a friend, and she was rock climbing, indoor rock climbing at a gym. You know, you're at college, especially there. I think there's just like a lot of outdoor things to do. And there's a lot of like those like adventurous activities to do there. And I think that's just what she was doing with a friend. And Kenna, just like she is, our whole family's pretty athletic. I mean, we've always done very athletic things, and we have great parents. Our dad, I could describe my dad as a real outdoorsman. He's always done a great job bringing us along on camping trips and showing us. And it's not just the boys or anybody. It's our whole family. I mean, our whole family has gone on camping trips of all of us. It's always just been a tent. We go out and we pitch a big tent and we stay at a little campsite somewhere. And our parents pile us all into the Suburban or whatever it was when we were younger, and we'd go out and we'd go camping. And so Kenna's always had an interest in that. And I remember going rock climbing with her a couple times, and she was just like drop dead amazing at it. The first couple times she had like upper body strength. She was just a great climber. I think she really liked it. But anyway, she went out climbing with this friend of hers. Something ended up happening with the rope she was attached to, and the girl on the bottom, there's like a device that's supposed to lock you if you ever fall too fast. But some of them are a little harder to figure out or require more of the user. And I think this girl didn't understand it. So when Kenna was climbing on the wall and slipped and was supposed to be caught by her harness and her rope, she actually wasn't caught, and she fell to the floor and she landed on her ankle. And I believe she severely broke it. It was terrible. I mean, she was in loads of pain. They called the ambulance. The ambulance came, picked her up, and took her somewhere. And I don't think she hung out in Idaho too long in a hospital there. We got her back home to get surgery on her. We had to recover from that for a little while. And I think what some people might suspect is when she experienced that fall, it was from like a great height. I think it was more than 20 feet that fall was. I don't know exactly, but I know she sustained some serious injury to the ankle. And I think some people believe she might have sustained a slight head injury that was unknown to some people at that time due to that fall. And so Kenna recovered from that ankle injury. And I believe she made a full recovery and she was doing just fine. But it was after that ankle injury she was recovering from that not too long after that she experienced another really tough hardship, and that would have been a car accident.
Just as Kenna was beginning to fully heal from the rock climbing accident with her friend, another traumatic event occurred. On May 7th, 2014, she was in a single car accident that left her severely injured and hospitalized for months. Her mom, Kelly, shared what happened.
Just having a bad episode, and she took her brother's car and drove 80 miles an hour and crossed over a embankment. And that was like a cement barrier thing in the middle of a road, and she crossed over it. So it like high centered her car and launched her car into the air. And that's when she had her high speed rollover car accident. A policeman had seen her fly by, and so he was attempting to pull her over. And so he was right there on the scene and pulled her out of the car. She was intubated on the scene of that accident and rushed to Harborview Hospital. She was on life support. We got a call from a Bothell police officer who actually was a friend of ours. She was in the locker room at the police department. She was either ending her shift or starting her shift, and she heard our name over the intercom in the locker room. We got to Harborview, and it was me and my son, and they said, go sit in this little room. So we went and sat in the little room, and I was pretty sure I knew what that meant because they were going to get a social worker. That didn't seem like it was a good sign to me when they went to get a social worker to come and talk to us instead of just taking us to a patient room or something. The little room off of the side of the ER that I didn't even know existed, not a good sign. We were sitting in that little room, and my husband showed up, so the three of us are sitting in the little room. And so they came and they said, we have a person. They're really bloody. Which one of you wants to come and identify and see if it's your daughter? And I knew that my husband wasn't going to be the one to go because he passed out when one of my sons had a couple stitches when they were like two. So I got up and I went. So at this point, I don't even know if it's an alive body I'm going to look at or a dead body. But it was an alive body, and it was my daughter. It was surreal. I was just like, okay, no, I'm going to go do this. I'm the mom. I'm going to go do it. That's my daughter. So, yep, I went back there, and she probably had hair down to her middle of her back at the time, but it was not on her anymore. It was all over the floor because she had what they call a scalp degloving injury, where she just took the top off of her head. So the forehead, there was no laceration across the top of her forehead. So like the top of her head was still on her head, but cuts went all the way down from like the front of her head to the back of her head on either side. So I don't know if glass from the sunroof of that car just like cut into the sides, but the forehead had a lot of glass in it, but there wasn't a big open wound across the top. So one of the things I remember about that was that one of the nurses was standing there, and so half of her head was kind of like chopped, like the hair, there was still some hair, and then the top was just like shaved like all the way off. And she said, I'm so sorry, I was trying to save some of her hair, but the doc came in and yelled at us, what the heck are you doing? We're gonna lose this patient. And they just shaved the top of her hair right off at that point.
At the time of the accident, Kenna's brother Hunter was a teenager still living at home. He shared what he remembers from the day before and after the accident occurred.
She has kind of a rough night at home. Something must have been bothering her, or this or that. And she drove down to my grandma's house. My grandma lives in Kenmore. I'd say 20 minutes away from us. You drive the highway to get there. She drove there kind of late at night. And she was upset, and she was going to go visit my grandma, which is kind of a weird thing to do. My grandma's older, and I think she wasn't kind of thinking in her right mind when she went and did that. But she went down to see my grandma, and I don't know if she talked to her for very long, but then she was driving on her way home. I'm pretty sure the road she was on, speed limit must have been like 35 or something, and she was going at 80, I think they suspected, and she hit the median. And it was a rollover car accident, so the car got flipped up, and it was like a station wagon. So those would be like kind of low and kind of flat already, and the roof of that car smashed. The spot of the car that smashed worse was right on the driver's seat, so it would have been right on her. The roof of the car came down on her head, smashed her head, broke her spine. I know when we first heard news of the accident, or when I first heard word of it, or they were talking to the first responders, there were a couple first responders that arrived on the scene and suspected her to be dead, or it seemed to be so severe that they wouldn't think the person inside the car would be living. Anyways, they did an amazing job rescuing her from that car and getting her out of that car and immediately transporting her to Harborview Hospital here in Seattle. We're probably real lucky to have her go there. And so I think she might have spent, say, like 20 days in the intensive care unit. It was real extreme because she had scars or cuts all over her head. She had a completely shaved head, and she went from like, I mean, this beautiful girl that, I mean, everybody loved to this girl who just rolled out of a car accident. Looked like kind of a scary individual if you saw her walking down the road. She just flat looked beat up. I think she probably had some cuts and scratches on her face, but her head looked bad. I mean, they just stitch you right up in the hospital, right? So she had these gnarly stitches going down her head, and then her back was I know she has two scars on her back. That vertebrae were completely destroyed or just completely displaced, and they had to go in there and do surgery and the fixing of individual vertebrae because the roof of that car just came down and smashed it. And so, boy, the recovery process for that. I remember my dad saying, I mean, we were all real beat up. And my dad's, I just remember him being pretty upset, but him saying, like, Kenna will never be the same after this. And I think, like, oh, like, people get in bad accidents, but you always, like, recover. And you might, like, walk a little bit funny after you have an accident, or maybe you have a cane or, like, walk, but you, like, recover and everything goes back to normal. But you never suspect someone will, like, get in an accident and almost lose the personality they had before. Almost like it's a different person after. I mean, it's still my sister, Kenna, but it's almost like a different version of Kenna. I mean, that's what we lost, was she was in that car accident and she sustained a traumatic brain injury. And because of that, my sister Kenna has never been the same again. She's just been a different girl since. And I'm not going to say she's been bad. She's been a whole new, totally different, great, fun-loving, hard-laughing girl.
You heard Kelly and Hunter share that Kenna was in the hospital for many weeks after the accident. And her mom told us what those weeks were like, how they learned that Kenna had suffered a traumatic brain injury, often referred to by Kelly as a TBI, and how they acclimated to who the new Kenna would be.
We survived the 46 days at Harborview. With Kenna's TBI, she did not have brain swelling. For whatever reason, she had a small brain bleed. She had a 6-hour spine repair surgery. She has rods and screws in her back from T1 to T7. They don't give you prognosis when your child has a traumatic brain injury. They don't tell you what a traumatic brain injury is. Some person came up with that word, traumatic brain injury, so that parents like us who have no idea what a traumatic brain injury means, you don't figure it out until weeks later when you're walking down the hall and then you pull the little flyer out that says, like, dealing with your traumatic brain injury, right? And I pull out the little flyer and it says permanent brain damage. And I'm like, what? Oh, this is just some really nice way to say permanent brain damage. I had a friend that was actually a Harborview nurse on another floor, and she came over to check on us. And I asked her, I said, what's the deal? I mean, what is she going to be like this forever? What's the deal? And she said, well, she was the only first one to be straight up with us. She said, probably they say a year out, that's when you look and go, what you see is what you got. But it's not like that. We're 6 years out and we've seen improvement all along. I mean, yeah, the first year is the hugest amount of improvement, but the second year there was still improvement, and the third year there was still improvement. First of all, you're just like waiting because she couldn't see, she couldn't feed herself. So the accident happened. The next day was the 6-hour spine surgery. And then about 3 more days, and then the little nurse came in. She was so cute. She's like, okay, we're going to turn down the Michael Jackson drug now. And they warned us that she would, like, swear a lot and just say, like, stuff that we'd never heard her say before. And that was all true. So they took out the tube, the breathing tube and all of that. We were all there for that. And yeah, there was just a lot of, like, arms and legs thrashing around all the time. She was, like, trying to rip out all the tubes and stuff that were going into her. She was trying to, like, grab at stuff. She was just, like, flailing arms and legs. They'd have to keep her tied in the bed after that. So then she wasn't too much longer that she got moved out of the intensive care unit. Maybe she was only in the ICU for a week and a half to 2 weeks, and then they moved her to a room on the floor. This doctor came by one day and he's like, your insurance isn't going to hold out much longer. They're going to move her to a nursing home and you don't want that, Mrs. Harris. And I was like, okay. At this point, we had to keep her tied in the bed. And so he's like, you just make sure you let them know that she has to be tied into this bed. They used, like, the restraints that they'd use in a mental hospital. to keep her, because if she got out of the bed, she could fall and hit her head again. And so we just had to make sure that everybody knew that came in there that she couldn't have those restraints taken off, because apparently if they got her to maintain her life and stay in the bed and whatnot, that they were going to move her to a nursing home. But nursing homes wouldn't take someone that had to be restrained to the bed. I think her care would have been less expensive at a nursing home. And so they were pushing for her to have to go to a nursing home. And the doctor's thought was that if she got moved to a nursing home, that her prognosis would be much worse than if she stayed there at the hospital. She couldn't go into their rehab yet. She needed like another week before they could take her in rehab. And honestly, they weren't really able to do that much with her in their rehab, because most of the time she refused to get out of the bed. She would just pull the blankets over her head, and she wasn't really talking too much yet at this point. She would like whisper stuff to you. And a lot of times it didn't make sense. She would like see things on the windowsill that weren't there.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
We also spoke to Kenna's sister, Cammy, and she told us that she remembered Kenna coming into her room the night before the accident and that she was behaving oddly.
She was extremely manic at the moment of her car accident. She wasn't really there, I don't think. Mania pushes you into risk-taking behavior. Like, that's one of the things. And, like, she was just out of control. And she had reached out to everyone that was home. She thought there were voices talking to her, and she was trying to make sense of it. And she had kind of exhausted everyone in the family because we didn't know what was going on with her, but she was being crazy. And I think everyone was just like so exhausted and confused by it. And it was so early in the morning when she went into everyone's room. And so they didn't know what to do. They were just like, hey, Kenna, like, all right, go back to bed. Why are you like this type thing, you know? Well, obviously they love her, wanted to be there for her, didn't realize how serious it was. And then she took off in the car without any shoes on, in her pajamas, and drove to my grandma's house and started bugging her. And my grandma didn't know what was going on with her and was like, what is going on with you? Then she felt weird there and no one really knew how to help her or what was going on. So then she just took off from there I think, kind of just like in a blind panic of like, who's going to help me? What's going on?
As Kenna's healing from the accident progressed, Kenna's parents started to piece together from their other children what had happened that day to cause such a terrible accident and wondered what Kenna was experiencing.
As I sat there in Harborview, I was like, what the heck? And then the kids all came, Mom, Kenna came in my room that night. Well, Kenna came in my room that night too. And she was like gibberish and she was like weird. And I said, I think we should call 911. And my husband's like, no, I'll calm her down. Hindsight's 2020. Looking back, we put the pieces together. And I'm like, I'm sure she was having like a massive manic episode or some kind of bad episode. I'm not a doctor. I don't know, but something was wrong with her. So I tell him that at Harborview. I'm like, I think I know why my daughter drove 80 and crashed this car. I think she was having a manic episode. They're like, okay, well, there's like really nothing we can do now. You know, we got to wait and see, yada, yada, what's going to pan out here. And so we waited and she did her whole time at Harborview. And then we went home. We had this thing called Rehab Without Walls. Amazing people that come into your home and help you finish rehabbing from a TBI. So we had them for like a month or two. I think we got 2 months. Finished with them the end of August. It was the first week of September that I was taking my son to college. And I took Kenna with me because I took Kenna with me everywhere I went. And all of a sudden, she's just up. She can't go to sleep. I had something with me, something, a sleep aid from the pharmacy or the drugstore, you know. Tried that. Tried a little Benadryl. She can't sleep. I mean, she just flat out can't sleep. We got my son dropped off. It wasn't easy, but we got back home. And after 3 or 4 days without sleep, you start showing other bad signs of your mental health not being good because now you're super sleep deprived. She was like seeing things or hearing voices and all kinds of stuff. But anyway, it took 2 months to get her a psychiatrist, and they diagnosed her with bipolar 1 disorder. She was diagnosed early fall of 2014 after that car accident. She'd taken medication for it from then on, and the medication wasn't quite enough to keep her doing good. She was hospitalized multiple times and finally started the ECT treatments.
Kelly told us that Kenna started a treatment known as ECT. ECT stands for electroconvulsive therapy and is a treatment used in patients with bipolar disorder. The treatment is administered by sending small electric currents to the brain, where changes can occur and symptoms of the disorder can be reduced or eliminated. When we spoke to Kenna's brother Hunter, he gave us more details about these ECT treatments that Kenna was receiving.
She had some days where she was a little more upset or things bothered her more. Ever since her car accident, I think it was recently, Kenna's been receiving these treatments. I want to say they're called ECT. The way Kenna would say it is it shocks her brain. She goes in and gets this treatment and they shock her brain is what they do. That's just the way she described it. And her description is probably good because she's the one that's going getting it done and no one else has ever had it done. I want to say they were every 2 weeks or so, or every week. And she was like, they would evaluate her, see if the distance between those treatments could be longer. But she was getting that done as well. What Kenna experienced from that is pretty bad. Like those treatments were not the best. She didn't like them very much. They were tough to get her to go to them because I think they were really hard on her, like hard on her body and hard on her mind. This is like a little bit graphic, but she would describe like the after effects of that treatment on her is they would make her, they would affect her sleep really bad. She couldn't sleep very well. But I remember her saying they made her feel like there were like spiders like crawling on her skin, which heck, like nobody wants that happen. That's a terrible feeling. And she would lay in bed and she would feel that. And I don't know if I would ever get any sleep if I felt that. And so she'd have to try to go to bed feeling that. And I'm sure there were some times it was worse, but I mean, that was something she experienced because of those treatments. But those treatments I mean, obviously we wouldn't have her do those if they didn't do any good. But I think the result of those treatments, or what they were trying to do, is kind of balance her mind out, or make her feel better, or balance the days that were ups and downs and kind of make them all a little more flat. And so you didn't have these harsh, she'd have really happy, great days. We didn't want her to have the days where you just drop off the deep end and you're all the way at the bottom and you're like sad as get out, because she was having those days. In days like that, you're experiencing depression, and she would say she didn't want to live, or all these like terrible things. And obviously you don't want a person to go through that. And so if there was a treatment that would balance your days out, I mean, I think that was something we would do. And I believe that's what those treatments did. And I think they did a good job, even though they were hard on her. That's what they would do. It was just hard to get her to go there and do it. And she would always kind of resent it. But in the end, she would usually end up going and doing it. And I think she knew it was good for her too, because I remember seeing a great effect. I mean, she was better overall. She'd still have sadder days, but she wouldn't have days that she was screaming and crying and really sad and tore up. And so that helped her out a lot. And that's why she was getting those treatments.
Kenna's sister Cammy told us that prior to the car accident, she was unaware of what Kenna was struggling with. But after her diagnosis, some of her behaviors began to make more sense.
Kenna always tried to be perfect. And that was a huge burden that we didn't see was like weighing on her until later on in her life, when we finally realized that she had bipolar. And that was after her car accident that we discovered she had severe bipolar disorder. And we went on her laptop and just found like just a lot of like self-hating like poetry. And she also had started a really beautiful book, but just like the other undercurrent of it was just kind of a little bit of a tortured soul, someone who had too much expectations for herself and just tried to be perfect all the time and hide what she was really going through, which was struggling with the eating disorder and with this like really trying to filter herself in this mental illness. You know, she was really struggling kind of alone in it and wasn't really letting people in.
Prior to the accident, Kenna had a few strange behavioral episodes that her family wasn't able to attribute to anything specific. But it became clear after the accident that she was dealing with some serious mental health concerns, in addition to the brain injury. Doctors eventually diagnosed Kenna with type 1 bipolar disorder, and she began to get treatment for it, as well as the brain injury she would spend years recovering from. Kelly told us how Kenna felt about these treatments she was getting, and how they helped her progress with life after everything changed so fundamentally for her.
She hated it, though. She hated it. It freaked her out bad. It freaked me out bad. Well, she got on medication, and after a few years, she leveled out to a manageable level, and in 2018, December, she used a job coach and got her first little part-time job at Fred Meyer's. She had the Fred Meyer job, but the combination of the TBI and the other stuff she was struggling with made it hard to keep a job, because once she had a job, she didn't want the job anymore. And then when she didn't have a job, she wanted a job. She got a job at Walmart the end of February 2020. It was last on her list of places in town to want to work, because in her mind, she had a 3.9 when she graduated from high school. And Kenna, with her TBI, she's what I call like in the worst possible place. She's like right on the fence. She can tell, she can remember what she was like before, and she can tell what she's like now, and she can't figure out why people treat her the way they do and why people won't treat her. Why guys don't want to date her and why her friends don't want to hang out with her anymore. She knows. She can tell when people look at her like they think she's a weirdo. You know, that was one of the worst parts of where she was at. So as a mom, it was hard when she came home and said, oh, I walked up to this group of people and tried to join in the conversation, and they looked at me like I was a freak. Kenna's processing speed is a little slower than it used to be. Kenna's highly capable in a lot of ways and not in others. She's super smart, friendly, intelligent, resourceful. And then sometimes she needs like so much help. Some days she calls me. If I'm not at home, she like calls me so many times and needs help. She can't find stuff. She can't remember what she's supposed to be doing. She needs help making appointments. She needs help with a ton of stuff. She would tell me sometimes at night, she'd be like, Mom, I'm going to leave. Because she wanted to leave. I'm like, I know you want to leave. She's like, well, I'm going to leave. I'm like, okay, well, I'll never stop looking for you. If something ever happened to you and somebody got you, I would never stop looking for you.
One of the things that Kenna struggled with the most after the accident was the constant feeling that others around her knew something was different about her. Kelly explained more about this.
Young people aren't like super clued in sometimes that someone else wants to be included in the group or needs, you know, wants to hang out or something. So some people are better at it than others. You know, sometimes she'd go out and play volleyball with a group of people or something, and then they'd go out for food after. And there'd always be somebody in the group that she said just made her feel really stupid and stuff. But she talked too loud too. Ever since her head injury, I don't know if it messed with her volume or something or her hearing. One of her friends can't taste at all since his head injury, but she could still taste, but she did have trouble with her volume. And then there's no filter. She didn't have a filter anymore because she hated it when I tell her that she was talking too loud. I would be like self-conscious sometimes, you know, and I early on in her rehab when I reach out to some of her friends and say, hey, you know, come over. She needs some emotional support here.
As she tried to move forward with her life, Kenna joined several groups that focused on those facing the challenges of healing from traumatic brain injuries and made several friends. We spoke with one of her friends named Seth. He told us about his friendship with Kenna and what her life was like after the accident.
So we met at a brain injury dinner at the Pyramid Ale House 4 or 5 years ago. We were sitting next to each other at this Pyramid Ale dinner for the BIAWA, and we just immediately just started talking and just immediately became best friends, started video chatting all the time, and yeah, it was just like a friendship from the beginning. I fell off a longboard not wearing a helmet and got a severe traumatic brain injury, which put me in a coma for 9 days in the hospital for 69 days. Due to that brain injury, I have a whole bunch of learning and physical disabilities. My biggest disability is probably my vision loss. I'm legally blind. She is one of the sweetest girls you could ever know. She's super nice, super caring. She's thoughtful, and she cares about other people. She laughs all the time. She has the most beautiful laugh. Super easygoing and fun to hang out with. Kind of felt stupid. She felt fat. She felt like she didn't belong, and she just wanted help being normal. Her impulsivity, her inability to like monitor and control her emotions. I believe she wanted to get help for her memory and like independence. She said she never had any friends. Nobody was nice to her. She loved God, though, and I was able to help her with a lot of those emotions, like not feeling loved or feeling stupid. She would call me when she was feeling those ways, and I'd be able to help her see that she wasn't what she thought she was.
Approximately 1 month before her disappearance, Kenna started working a new job at a local Walmart. She sometimes enjoyed the job and sometimes struggled with the challenges that came with working in such a busy environment. There's no way to know what was going through Kenna's mind on the day that she chose to leave instead of going to work. But her mom shared with us how the job had been going.
She was working at the Walmart job and she wasn't excited about the job before she got it. She wasn't, but she got it and she was cashiering. And She was getting better at it. The first few days were tough. The training, she struggled with that a little bit. It took her a little bit longer to get through the training than it did the rest of the group that was going through it, but they were super patient with her. And then she was working, I think, about 3 days a week, maybe 4-hour shifts. That could have been 3-hour shifts. Her and I had kind of looked at what she tried in the past and came up with that formula. It seemed to be a good amount that she could tolerate. And it had probably been the last week then out of the 4 weeks that she worked that she started saying she didn't want to work there anymore.
Kenna was very close with her friend Seth. He told us more about his conversations with Kenna in the lead up to her disappearance and his thoughts on where she may have gone.
Her mom wanted to know if I'd talked to her because she'd gotten on a bus and just left. She was supposed to come here the week before and she didn't because of the shutdown. First thing that went through my head was, oh, she probably just like went to one of her friend's house. She'll be back soon. Like, I was kind of thinking, like, they don't need to worry. And then as more time passed, I started realizing that she was gone, and I started panicking a little bit. And I got angry at her for doing this, putting all of us through this, running away without telling me, putting her family and I through this horrible, the fact that she would just leave all of us without even really a second thought. It seemed like, so I'm still angry at her, but I'm a lot less angry at her, and now I'm just worried and heartbroken. I have to remain faith that she will come back or she will be found. So I believe she left just because she wanted to be independent and it wasn't happening because she got her driver's license and she wanted to get her own car, but her dad wouldn't let her get one because of insurance and stuff. I think she wanted to get her own car and she wanted to get her own place. And she was just sick of being unable to do all of that. And so I believe she was hoping to go stay with one of her friends or somebody that knew her so she could just like get away for a little bit. But then nobody would let her. So she was doing well. The day before she left, she was talking to me and talking about how she wanted to quit her job. But she did that a lot when she would get a new job. She would very quickly be like, I don't like it, I want to quit. So I was talking to her and trying to convince her to keep her job. Well, I felt like I had convinced her that her job was a good one and she should stay at it. And I thought she was going to keep her job and I thought everything was okay, but apparently it wasn't. That's one of the things that surprises me most is because she was terrible at keeping secrets and she would tell me about anything she was planning on doing. And so the fact that she was able to keep this from me boggles my mind. So my mom says she thinks it was an impulsive decision. Like at that moment, she decided not to go to work and to leave. She doesn't think Kenna really thought it out or through. Yeah, because she told me everything. And that's another reason I don't think she had been playing this for a long time. I think this was just spur of the moment. She was just decided I want to get out. I don't think she planned on staying away from this long. I don't think she could have consciously done this to her parents and friends and family. So yes, I do believe she planned on coming back. Her biggest thing was the combination of bipolar and brain injury in regards to like impulse control and inability to control her emotions.
That brings us to the end of part one of Kenna's story. In part two, we're going to dig a little deeper into Kenna's case and learn more about the search efforts for her. You'll get to hear from the investigator tasked with finding Kenna and explore various theories in this case. Keep an eye out for part two tomorrow. At the time of her disappearance, Kenna Marie Harris was 25 years old. She's approximately 5'8" tall and weighs around 180 pounds. She has short brown hair that may also appear red in color. She has blue-green eyes and a long scar along her spine. Kenna suffers from memory loss and continues to struggle with the injuries she received over the years. If you have any information about the disappearance of Kenna Harris, please contact your local law enforcement agency or the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office at 425-388-3845. You can follow Kenna's story on social media at Please Find Kenna Harris.
I hope that someone good is taking care of her and that she's somewhere where she's happy and safe, and that's why we're not hearing from her. But then the other side is that, like, she's someone bad has her and she's trapped or she's dead. I don't know where else she would be. And I actively work like every moment of the day to keep that hope alive. And I have other friends who are doing the same thing and keep telling me, Cammy, like, she's alive. Like, I feel her out there somewhere. Like, she hasn't left us. So that gives me hope.
If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time for part 2 of Kenna's story. Thanks for listening.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but 2 trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.